Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
When you hear that bomb blast, get a shot blast. Listen to the podcast, it's all up in your bomb jazz. Big J kills them like O.J. Simpson. A quick hit the fingerless glove, don't miss. Hit break quick by that big dick, Dave Smith. He all up in your ribs while he talking politics. Or get bit when you rattle by that Puerto Rican snake. And natural born killers, legion of skanks.
Welcome to the crash!
When I come up in the place, you know I come correct.
Woo-ha, got you all in check.
He was such a weirdo. I don't think I respected Busta Rhymes enough as a rapper, because now that I'm older, like, I realize he's actually really fucking good.
He was always an excellent rapper.
I just, one more thing. He's fucking great.
He's retarded. It's just his, all of his songs are so weird and kind of quirky that I was like, all right, this guy's just a retarded black.
No, well, I don't know why you're saying these things like they're mutually exclusive. He was always an excellent rapping retarded black.
Yeah, he. I said it was strange. I went to go see that was Nas, Wu-Tang Clan, and Busta. They were always kind of rotating in the third person.
Yeah,
because it changed enough that, but it was Busta Rhymes when I went, and Busta Rhymes was on that lineup. I was like, oh, well, at least it's Busta Rhymes. I know the songs, but I'm like, I don't really care about Busta Rhymes. And then easily stole the show.
Oh,
I
mean, awesome. Yeah,
because he's silly, but because he's also kind of silly, he performs. Like, he engages with the audience. He involves them. He does a lot
of things. Also always he was a performer, which is very rare in hip hop.
He does things uniquely. And then Wu-Tang Clan, who I was most excited for, as always, even though I'm going to go try again, they're just not good live.
They just walk around the stage like drunk black people in a parking lot.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's two guys in that orbit. I always thought Busta Rhymes and Redman were always like goofy and class clowns, but they were excellent rappers, like two of the best of their generation. They just kind of almost didn't get the recognition because it was always like, yeah, that retard over there.
There was a lot of time where, like, music videos were like, I'm not going to respect a retarded person. Like, I'll bump my head to it. But then when you like really listen to his like lyrics and his like flow, it's fucking great. But all of his videos were like shot like this.
It was revolutionary at the time, though.
It was so crazy.
At the time, you were like, no one's ever been that close to the camera.
They put the camera right up in his big old fucking body.
P. Diddy's videos were all that fisheye lens. So they were like looking at a bubble, basically.
Yeah. But he was fucking great.
Yeah. Yeah, he was so good. But it's so funny, those corny ones never, like, Busta Rhymes, because he was involved with so much like real, like actual, like hardcore stuff, that he didn't get like dismissed like Biz Markie or Ski-Lo. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller.
I wish I had a girl who looked good. I would call her. I wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat. Six. I don't know what he says the next lyric. Six something something.
I don't know either.
I don't remember. I love that song though.
But how about
Impala? No way.
There you go.
There was Lucas with the lid off that came and went. Positive K, I Got a Man. What Your Man Got to Do with Me?
That's
a great song.
Anyone that was silly, they give them a shot, like a one hit, and then it's like, but no one's going to listen to your. Oh, do you have a hardcore song also?
Also, I texted you guys, and we can discuss it on the Friday Night Hang. This little insight into the world. Can you guys do Rogan on the 11th?
I can't.
Ooh, I'm already doing Rogan on the 11th solo.
Well, you can't, Jay?
I can't.
Why not?
I'm in California.
That sucks. I do every episode of the Joe Rogan Experience now.
Yeah, Dave's like, I don't really want.
This really conflicts with my other Rogan.
I'm sure he'll give us another date. I'll text him back.
Yeah, he's like, I left a fart in there, and he goes, I think it still stinks. I don't want to go back just yet.
He's like, did Joe run this by me? Did I tell Joe that people are allowed in the studio that day? I watch a lot of your debate, Dave. It's so funny how many people are like, which it's funny enough, but it's like, the amount of people on Twitter who are like, bro, I'm not going to fucking side with a faggot. Like, dude, that's your whole – you just beat him in a debate. It doesn't have to be because he's gay.
This is
Yeah, it's not so much that he's gay. It's just that he fucked himself in the ass on the biggest show in the world. Like, it is. I did nothing to him. He 100% just did it to himself. But the entire Rogan sphere has fucking turned on this guy. It's, and it's, again, it's like I won by default. It's not even like, oh, I fucked this guy up. He came in and made the opening 45 minutes like a struggle session with Joe Rogan about how he has the wrong people on his show. It was wild.
Is the Rogan sphere the thing that he works out with between his legs?
Yeah, but I don't check the internet comments.
My Rogan sphere. Get your Rogan sphere now. If you order one Rogan sphere, I'll send you a second Rogan sphere for 19.
Rogan sphere now in the shape of monkey heads.
Dude, I never check the internet comments. I walk right out of the studio into the gym and I ask the Rogan sphere what he thought of it. He tells me everything I need to know.
Dave, thank you for being so honest on the show today.
Now, very intelligent.
Dude, isn't it funny though? You pull the curtain on the Rogan sphere and you just see it's a 5'2" little muscly guy. You go, ooh, what are you doing back here? You're not supposed to see this. Ooh.
Well, he gives me like a fake college diploma or something.
Yeah. He goes, Dave, you want to be smart.
Dave, you never needed a brain.
You know, I think it'd be a fun idea for a future show.
What?
We should do a debate between me and Jay, maybe on a subject that matters to you, maybe on one that doesn't. Just cats versus dogs, doesn't matter.
And I do like the idea. It's like me and Lewis aren't like you debate. You've done a bunch of these now, and me and Lewis want to see your world, so we'll debate each other.
You're itching to get in yourself. So I moderate a debate between the two of you.
Yeah.
And I think it should be. And like, by the way, we'll have 1,000 ideas in these. I'm just spitballing right now, but I'm saying just the idea, like building your own roads versus just not building. Like, if you want to just do it, like the stupidest, like joke of it.
I think
it'd be something heavy politics or something stupid.
I think it should be a serious topic that neither of you two are allowed to do any research into.
Oh yeah, G Mike said he'll get the slide charts and put us on the slide charts of who goes ahead for each a little bit.
Each point. Ooh. Ooh, they just pushed Lewis up. Oh, that's a pretty good point, Lewis. Ooh.
Legion of Skanks style debate rules, which, by the way, another folk.
I agree. No research, Dave. I agree. It's like
no research.
Yeah. On the honor system.
Topics out of a bucket, like where we like maybe argue three different topics.
I like that.
And you pull the topics out of a bucket, and it could be as hardcore as fucking dumb I am. I can't name a single real issue, but yeah, something.
I mean, it could be right up there with war. Borscht. You know.
War Borscht? Dude, War Borscht. Dude, I'll debate War Borscht.
War Borscht. I don't
know if you know.
It's three War Borschts last year.
If we use buckets, we have to give Tony Hinchcliffe a 25% kickback.
That's true.
No, that
you
is
hear
true.
The sound of the kitten, meow, that means your debate's almost fucking over.
Don't worry. All proceeds go toward buying more buckets.
But if you see West Hollywood Bear, your debate sucks.
Wrap it up, bitch. Tony Hinchcliffe's in town.
The debatester's here.
Dude. And then if this really hits, new podcast. Let's go. What's funny is full curtain pull.
Debate
this book. Is one of the ideas that True TV, we were batting around with True TV, a show called
Master Debaters.
And which I think somebody used that afterwards, like comics use like a debate show.
If you guys remember, those meetings were frustrating and we saw it happening and we go, especially that one, particularly with the debating one. And we gave them the thing. They were like, they waited for us to give them, I believe, a deck, a fucking meeting, a whole thing, sitting down with them. And then I think the second time we sat down, then they go, well, you know, we're already kind of working on a show like this.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, you're not. No, you're not. Like
that's where we realize that they steal ideas.
Yeah. We're like, they're absolutely. We're like,
but we had been talking about the idea for a while. I think they gave us like $8,000 each or something like that. And it was more, I think it was the biggest. Was it four? I thought it was more than that.
It was only four. It meant something.
It was supposed to be $5,000 each. And I think they taxed a portion of it themselves.
I think it was at the time, the single biggest check I had been handed for one thing. And I was so like broke at the time that it was kind of like, even when they didn't want to pick up the show, I'm like, look, dude, we already got rich off this. So like, it doesn't really, it's like, if they don't pick up the show, they don't pick up the show.
TV just burns money, bro. You know,
the fucking, the dwindle away of that was so fucking interesting. We were in weekly meetings on a done deal thing of we were going to shoot. And then one day it was like, I remember because I was walking outside my apartment in East Village. And just when we, I don't know which one of it, I feel like it was me, but one of us just kind of had the thing of being like, hey, we could all just act like this isn't happening and walk. It got so far away. We were in the woods with a mom and her son and everything. We were like, hey, you know what? And by the way, do you know, if I remember correctly, the way we got to something with camping with somebody was Lewis goes, it was about like Lewis using the term, which is a good term he's used, goes, yeah, if you just kind of give us the tent poles, like we can kind of work within the thing. And it's like, maybe you're camping with a mother and her son.
The show ended up being,
it was supposed to be an in studio show. It was supposed to be like a Howard Stern's like version of like Skankfest or a Legion of Skanks. Initially.
It was almost supposed to be like, you're going to start doing different things with people. Like it was like that, that was based off of the kid that we had, a fan that was a Boy Scout. It was almost like the ultimate Legion of Skanks fan experience. So he was an adult Boy Scout. And,
but that was like, but that was my point just being though, that was one of the ideas when we had like a done deal. The idea went from like filming us in studio to we were in the fuck. I'm telling you, that was the craziness of where that meeting was. We were on the phone, just everyone was kind of like, hey, you know what? Like, we'll just take that check and like, we're good. Like, everything just kind of went our own way. There was no like, there was no like ceremonious like walking away from it. It just, we stopped.
I wish we had the fucking notes still. I bet you some one of us have them still. Cause there was, remember we were going to go to the Mermaid Festival in Brooklyn with like a another fan was like going to dress as mermaids and do like, but we were so willing to dance. You know, when Chappelle was like, I'm not going to put on a dress and dance. I was like, give me a dress. Give me a mermaid dress. Let me go. I'll flop my tail.
Oh, the three of us would have been in bikini tops and mermaid bottoms. I would have been in a bikini top and a tank top.
You go, Jay, we've already gotten $4,000 and they said there's another $4,000 coming. Put on the mermaid outfit. Like, what are we talking about here?
Danced so much to get a true TV show.
It was funny that we literally just went ahead with this thing where it was this whole kind of weird idea that we kind of saw something in it that we thought would be good. Like, yeah, we meet our fans. One of them's a Boy Scout. We go do this. One of them works here. We go do this. And then like a few weeks into it, we all just kind of went, this idea's not that good.
Dude,
there we go. Let's just do a different thing. Let's do a game show. Then we just completely went a different direction. That is so weird.
Yeah.
But whatever. It was, you know, there's all those things like that, like along the way. I think about like getting the Montreal Just for Laughs Festival, like a similar kind of thing. Like nothing came of it for me at all. But I needed that little thing. You needed like a little feeling, like a win. Just in a sea of losses, like a little win that just keeps you going for a little bit more. Yeah, so like, I really am exactly grateful to them.
This is the beautiful thing about comedy. It's like, you don't really get them until you're like 5 or 10 years in. You start getting these little wins, right? People can't handle the heat though, up until that point, because, well, that's not true. The first like 5 years, the wins are just doing well on stage or getting into another club.
Yeah.
Get into the cellar, and then you get Montreal, like, you know, a lot of guys get it like 5, 6 years in. I got mine at like 10 years in or something like that, or 9 years in. But it's like, you know, last comic standing. These are like little, just little tiny like fish hooks that keep you going to just barely get you over the hump.
Yeah. Mine's were, I wasn't quitting when I did Comic View. I just shouldn't have been on television. But then when I first came to New York, like New Joke City, which was like public access TV. And then I think the first thing after that was Premium Blend. That was like a real like, oh shit, you made that mark. And then at like 10 years in is, I guess almost 9, 10 years in is when I got Half Hour Special. That was a thing. Montreal was a thing. I just didn't show up in Montreal.
Yeah, especially when you got Montreal, it was a much bigger deal to comics.
It was a bigger deal. And I did substantially like underperformed, like pretty bad. Really?
You didn't kill it in Montreal? I literally was. It all came together for me.
That's great. No, I did nothing. Not on New Faces. I did great. Like when I became a regular at that festival was a few years later when Robbie who's Netflix now, but his first year there, the two people he brought in for the Nasty Show on his like call were me and Patrice. And like when I just went to the Nasty Show, then I started.
Kurt Tucker's never booked me on the fucking Nasty Show, not once.
You really should have been on that.
I mean, like they never brought me back for anything. I did. I killed it at my showcases for New Faces. I got a write up as a breakout performer for the New York, like one of these like publications.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then I had a, I was when Roast Battle was like just popping off. This was like the first year that Roast Battle was like a big deal and it was going on Montreal. And I roast battled Alex Edelman, who's now massive, like the biggest Jewish comedians alive.
Yeah.
And I won my roast battle against him. So it was just, and then that fucking.
You're kind of like, you're like the guy who like beat John Jones in sparring once. Yeah. And you're like, I took him out. I took him down.
I'd still beat him in a roast battle. That's not what he does. You know what I'm saying?
No, of course. He does like one man show. He does like almost like hybrid stand up one man show type stuff.
I think he's got it's two awards. You got a Tony and an Emmy.
He's got an HBO special. My son's best friend's parents, when I started, or I told them I was a comedian, they were like, "Oh, we saw Alex Edelman. Do you know who he is?" Like, we saw him at this club. It was the best experience of our life. They're super Jewish.
And by the way,
he was so young when we met him. He was a sweet kid.
He's always been a sweet kid, but it was funny because he was a kid. Also, as one of the best examples of like, it's hard. I mean, at this point, you have to. I mean, he's like a bankable, like this. This is more like the situation of like when Mike Birbiglia was my contemporary and got huge. I didn't quite understand what the huge was of his thing. Alex Edelman was like, I looked at it as like, no, I could bullshit with Alex for about 15 minutes. And then you're just kind of like, okay, kid, that's enough questions and weird, whatever, and hanging out. And it seemed like he was a climber a little bit. Like he would kind of like latch on to a person. Like he was Gary Goldman's kind of guy.
He was like 17.
Godfrey for a long time.
So he would just kind of. Like,
I don't remember that.
I didn't know that either. But he used to like just bounce, like kind of around, and then he went overseas for a while and said he was doing well over there. And I was like, oh, well, maybe he found his thing. And I'd see him like be like a little more like adult and stuff. But it was still every time I saw him, I treated him. I was like, look at this kid still hanging around trying.
It's with some of those guys, especially
making bigger moves than I'll ever understand.
Well, especially the ones who start as teenagers. Like literally, I mean, Alex was like 16, I think, when I met him. I think I've told the story before, but it's just so funny to me. But I remember Pete Davidson was also like a teenager. I mean, he was when I first met him. Yeah, it was something 17 or something. And I remember him literally asking me with the most wide-eyed, like just a boy asking questions, like, "How do you talk to girls after a show? Like, what do you say? How do you approach them? How do you do this?" And it's just funny. Obviously, he's a kid at the time, but he went on to be the most famous pussy slayer in our generation. And I just remember, like, when he was, like, a kid being, like, how it was, like, little being, like, oh, how do you talk to? So you just, like, go, what's the first thing I should say? And, man, he figured it out.
Yeah, he did.
Figured that out.
Isn't there something?
I remember.
Let me ask a question to you guys. It's like interesting, and maybe you guys don't share this, but I definitely, if I'm being completely honest, like definitely would feel something like this. Isn't it funny? Like your perspective, even to some degree, can change with someone's fame when you're knowing them. Like Alex Edelman is not a great example for some reason, but he even is. Actually, he is, because when I'd see Alex before, sometimes, you know, there'd be a time where you'd be like, I'm going to avoid this because, like, I don't feel like talking to him right now. And now if it was like, Alex Edelman's going to come over, do you care if I bring Alex Edelman for your barbecue? I'd be like, hey, shit, Alex Edelman's going to be at my barbecue. We have an actual shift. I said, there's no way with the intimate knowledge I have and, like, time I'd spent with, like, Kevin Hart. If Kev came to my house or my show now, I'd still have a thing. I'm like, oh, dude, Kevin Hart's here. You just can't. Tim Dillon. Tim's a great example of that. Not that I never did want to see Tim, but I'm just saying, like, you know, Tim was a part. Shane, I remember asking people if Shane could come with me to their thing. Hey, do you mind
if it makes sense, though? I don't think, at least for me, it's not. It's really not the fame of it. It's that someone like Alex, if you were like, oh, Alex Edelman's coming to things. I haven't seen Alex in like years.
Can you pull up Alex's dumb Jew face, please, so we get a visual for people?
I'd be, at least now, there's just, it'd be like, oh, that'd be interesting to talk to him. Cause now it's like, oh, this guy I used to know as a kid, years later, he's achieved this success. Just an interesting thing to catch up with.
But forget the interaction you're going to have. You're right. Alex would be very interesting to talk to now. I get that too. I'm talking about the just internal involuntary reaction you have.
Well, back in the day, it's almost like it goes from like, hey, dude, I don't want to shake hands with him. He probably has boogers on his fingers.
I mean,
there's a real problem.
Yeah, to a degree, what I'm saying is that, yeah, and I'm also at the point with Pete Davidson. I just remember like situations like Pete Lewis, you knew him and convincing me to have this kid on the podcast. I became friendly with him and he came over to play. Like Chris Italia called me one day because he had Pete with him and he was like, hey, can I bring Pete over to like play video games or something? Like, he doesn't have anybody in his life. But I'm like, sure.
Chris, are you telling me to be Pete's new dad?
Yeah. So he brought Pete over to play, like NBA 2K with me for a while. And it wasn't, I didn't want him there or anything. I'm just like, the idea was just like, yeah, I guess I'll have Pete in my house. Like, and now it's just like, again, if he was like coming to like a barbecue or something, it's just when he walks in, there's just, when you see him
now, like, when Pete walks in, he goes, hey, nice house, Jay, I'll take it.
Yeah,
you go, well, I just bought it, I wasn't really
can I buy your house for my sneakers?
Yeah. Maybe you guys don't feel it if you're not getting the explanation I'm making, but I'm just saying, it's just something about,
hey, I understand you're a star fucker, we get
the
it.
Actual visually of seeing them, you just have a different internal reaction. At one point you were kind of like, take them or leave them, as far as like, if you don't see them.
I mean, you're naming all people that I don't necessarily understand, like, the feeling. I know what you're saying, but
I don't deal with them differently. I don't view them differently in my interaction with them. It's just the idea that you're like, it's that X factor R of just like, damn, dude, Pete's fucking famous. Like walking in his room, like, holy shit, he is famous, huh? Where I never thought about it.
I think it in a weird way makes me want to be around them less.
Absolutely.
I feel kind of guilty. I feel guilty saying that. It's not really fair.
I agree,
when I see, you know, when I, like, if I'll have moments, like I just had a moment the other day with like Tony. And sometimes, like, I've had moments like this when you're just like alone with Shane or Tim or something like that, and you almost have a moment where you got to be like, yo, dude, like, what you're doing is fucking incredible. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, there's just, it's so big what they're doing. Well, but then when I do that, I just feel like it's such a cringy moment. Like, I feel awful about myself that I'm saying it, but I almost feel kind of like obligated to. And it's just, it makes me uncomfortable. And I'm like, I'd rather just not have that.
I hate having to be like to Tony. I'm like, dude, wow, man, Netflix, I can't believe it. But in my head, I'm going, like, fuck you, Tony. Fuck your dumb shit. No, I'm kidding. I'm not that way. No. I hate having to be a phony and be pretending to be happy for my friends is really what I'm saying.
We also don't like just the star factor that you're talking about makes me uncomfortable in a way. Now, I'm not saying I would be that way. If me and Shane, if we all went out or something like that, it'd be like, whatever. We're just us hanging out. But I hate that almost like if you're like somewhere public and then they come in and then you feel that energy. It's like, it just makes me very uncomfortable.
Can I say it's getting also the distance from the people is the thing. When you are more watching their life change versus being there for it, because I always say, like, Shane's not – when I'm bullshitting with Shane, I realize, like, the level of fame he is now. But I'm saying, like, I don't feel any sense of, like big dicking from him, or that I'm like, Mr. Shane, I wouldn't feel weird to ask him a question. You know what I mean? There's nothing, like, I could ask him that I'd feel –
well, Shane hasn't changed at all. This guy's like Tony.
I've known him at least more because the people I'm using more, why I'm saying Pete and stuff. And because Nate's not even a good Nate. I said that in Nashville this week. I'm like, yo, the way people talk about Nate, they're like, I had a barbecue and Nate and his wife came by. And you're like, okay. And they're like, oh, is that the story? Like, Nate walked
in. Well, I'm so removed from Nate's fame. And like, what, like, so for me, it feels like no difference. When I hang out with Nate, it's just
zero difference. Yeah.
Nate's not like, he is famous in my world, but it's not like the same way that Tony or Shane are famous, like, in my direct world. Yes. Like, when I'm getting on stage at a fucking 110 seater, right? And like, I'm going like, oh shit, these people just saw Shane in an arena. It doesn't register to me that they're seeing like Nate in the arena. Like, me and Nate are just like in different universes. Right.
No, well, that's, I think, but I think you'd probably agree that's a part of it. That's for sure. Like, 50% of it. The other 50% is just that, like, even though we all were, I think we all were like fairly close, maybe to different degrees with like Shane and Tim and those guys. We were like close to Nate on kind of a different level. It was early in the game when we all did nothing but hang out with each other all the time. I was just like so much closer with Nate that it's still Nate. Like, it kind of doesn't matter. It's like, we've just like, I don't know. And then also that it is, like Lewis said, it's so removed from our world. But it was a little surreal. One of the last times I was down in Nashville and I was hanging with him, and we actually like went out, and just seeing how famous Nate is when you go out with him. Like, it's not like, like one of us. It's like every block you walk down, all the eyes are on him.
Right. But to what you're saying, like, you do want to hang out with Shane. You do want to hang out with Nate. To your point, Kev and Pete are good examples now, is because they were there. And then when they went away, in the time they went away, became like something different.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So that's why I'm saying it's weird. Like, you're right. I want to go hang out with Kev, my buddy from 25 years ago, but I'm going to be hanging out with Kevin Hart, whether I like it or not. Does that make
sense? The other side of it is this is what happens. I noticed this a while ago with like Rogan at the Comedy Store. Like,
does that make sense? What I'm saying, though?
Yeah, of course. One of the first times, Jay, you've said it 15 different ways.
No.
One of the first times I hung out with Rogan at the Comedy Store was and this happens a lot with Shane. It happened with other people, but I just don't hang out with Shane in public that much. But like, Rogan was in the center of a group at the Comedy Store, and then it was like circles of men standing around him, right? And I was just like, I'm not going to be in a circle of men standing around another man hanging on his words like a faggot. I would rather not hang up with Rogan than be that guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, comics, we're all supposed to just like, you know, even no matter what it is, like, that's especially the way we just sort of grew up. It was like everyone was just sort of in it, and we were all came from different areas in life, and it was like we're all just kind of equals, you know what I'm saying? Even if people had more success, it's a New York thing as well. Like, nobody really gave a shit. Like, I didn't realize how rich Jim Norton was for the past 2 decades,
right? You know
what I'm saying? Because it was never presented. Like, Jim Norton's very wealthy and was wealthy from the radio and touring, and like, you know, and you don't, like, to this day, even like, Jim's never talked about it. You'll know exactly how rich Tony Hinchcliffe is if you hang out with him for a half hour, or Bert Kreischer, or any of these guys that are from sort of the LA circle.
Yeah. Type in general, but I am trying to think, was there a New York?
There's also a thing, like, you know, Lewis, particular, we've talked about this a bunch, but Lewis, you have a particular chip on your shoulder about the, like, don't be a fan of another dude type thing. And I do think sometimes, like, that's your own, like, you take that too far.
Well, I'm not being very serious when I said don't be a fan of another dude. I mean, I'm being half kidding, but no, it's
no, no, I know sometimes you're speaking in jest, but
I feel bad about myself if I'm watching another man like perform.
But the thing is, there's a thing in this world, and weirdly, because we've done this show, like, you know, the three of us for a long time now. And when we started the show, for sure, it was more like we were Jay's openers and Jay was more established than us. But all three of us always had a thing where it was like, in this game, weirdly, sometimes people just settle down for being someone else's second fiddle. They just go, okay, I'll just be the guy who opens for this guy.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just be the guy who's known as being associated. And like, there was always something where it was like, no, that's never, you know, like, none of us ever wanted to do that. None of us ever.
Well, I think that was a conscious thing. It's like, it was never be like it wouldn't have worked as ever, if even if it started that way, as like Big Jay Oakerson and the Legion of Skanks. You guys aren't like Huey Lewis in the News. Like, that would
To be fair, for the first like 50 episodes, it kind of was that. And then me and Dave started getting a chip on our shoulder. And like, remember that? Like, we had that huge blowout at the Creek.
Yeah, but I'm talking about even like doing it at your place. Like, no, the show's conception was based on the idea that you guys were going to hang there and help me because I was, you know, doing comedy longer than you guys. And it was like, hey, I guess I got a podcaster saying I have to do now. And you guys were like happy to do it with me and Lewis.
No, what, that was no doing on your end. It was the nature of the game. Me and Dave were much more willing to be second fiddle to somebody. It just is what it is.
You have to be at some point.
Yeah, but
you don't have to be publicly on a platform where you're presenting yourself that way. So in the beginning, it was like, yes, you have to go open for people, or you have to sort of have, it's a mentorship. In any business, forget just comedy, you need sort of mentors and people to sort of show you the ropes, you know? But when you're doing it on a podcast, it's a very weird, different thing. If you're like, if it's Big J Oakerson and Luis J. Gomez and Dave Smith. It didn't, you know, whatever. It was just the nature of the game. We kind of did it in a public way, which was a little bit like weird. But I remember there was a time where for sure we had a chip on our shoulder and you were just kind of going like,
it's not you. That wasn't, I was telling somebody about this the other day on a phone call, actually, what was the fucking worst thing. And we've all felt this, I'm sure, to some degree in different ways, but you've, on this one particularly, when we go to the cell, you guys are my friends. My friends all came into my life circumstantially. I didn't pick them because of status ever, whether they were further along than me or behind me. And me and Lewis became organic friends. Me and Dave became very organic friends. It was just like based off of, at least in my mind, it was based off of just we laughed together and had a good time and had similar interests. So, but when we go to places we all know now it's like, with years in, like it's a ball bust ultimately, but like they don't realize like the grenade they're leaving when like a Sherrod Small or somebody, or even with Keith or somebody, you walk up and it's like, oh, where's Jay? And where's your bitches? And then they were like, where's the Lewis? When Sherrod said, he goes, where's Lewis? And I go, and I know he meant,
Dave.
He goes, yeah, no, that's what I call him, Lewis and the other Lewises and stuff. Like these are all funny things in retrospect, but like they're, not only were they making you guys get a little chip on your shoulder, I'm feeling it too. I'm going like, can you guys stop like doing like they're here with me because they're here hanging with me. So it's like,
well, it's all the thing about it is, it's funny looking back on it in hindsight, is it's just all of us being having our own insecurities. And so it would be like, the thing is that Jay would always love, you've always been this way. You'd always love to have a little entourage with you. And a big part of that is like, which I can relate to, it's your own insecurities and uncomfortable thing where it's like, if you're going to walk into a fucking room where there's a thing, you'd rather be there with a couple of your buddies. And then you're at least like, you're there with someone to bullshit with. And it's not who should I go?
Bullshit other than where do I go? And
where do I go? Who do I go talk to? Do I go sit with this group?
All I wanted to be was, I wanted to be E, and not another turtle. Jay had a bunch of turtles. That was the problem. Yeah. It was all these turtles.
Well, but the thing is like, but so then it's like, that's your insecurity. So then Jay would always be like the one to try to facilitate. Like he'd always be like, oh dude, like, oh, you guys have your spot here. Okay. I'm doing that. And then I'm doing the cellar after here. I'll pick you up and then we'll go down to the cellar afterward. And you know, and there'll always be like a thing where it's kind of like, oh dude. And then I'll buy a pizza and then we can come back and crash at my place if you want to. Right? It'd be like a fun night. And the thing about it is that it's partially your own insecurity being like, I'd rather roll with a crew than not. But then it became our insecurity of being like, well, I'm not just the crew. Like, right, I want, you know what I mean? Like, I want to be the, so it's just, and then, you know, I think when the blow up that Lewis was referring to at the Creek, it's just whenever you mix like being like young men with a bit of insecurity, okay? So like a teaspoon of young, a teaspoon of insecurity, and then 3 gallons of failure, and you mix that together, it just ends up being this thing where it's like, well, there is, I'm just sitting here being the crew, and this is why I'm fucking broke and I have nothing, you know, blah, blah. And like it just
and Jay is also like, at the time bad. Broke and has nothing.
Yeah.
But I remember it was an interesting thing because in comedy, and it's shifted a lot, right? So you came from, we all did, you came from like a lineage of like real like kind of vicious ball busting. And like, it was like the Bobby Kellys and the Patrices. It was like this tough love, sort of like, you know, you're my fucking opener. Shut up. Like, you know, and you were better. And every year or every generation became less like aggressive with it. You know what I'm saying? But you still had that in you when we were like, we were your guys. You know what I'm saying? You were a ball buster and it was like a thing. And Soder actually put it best. And I believe Soder had the conversation with you. And I thought it was a great way to put it. And I think about this all the time. And I think about it with Zach, or I think about it with Scott Chaplin, or people that open for me that are my friends that are like, quote unquote, below me in the lineage. It's about, you have to get them over. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, he was like, dude, you're Andre the Giant. You got to let Hulk Hogan slam you. You know what I'm saying? And I think that perspective, whatever. I mean, Dan speaks just
and ultimately, Jay did let me. I broke my back, but Jay did try to let me slam him.
Yeah, so the one, you know, one day at the Silver Dome.
Place went nuts.
We didn't know until
for my opener.
Until it happened, we didn't even know that Jay was going to let us slam him. Just until that moment,
we were nervous in the locker room before we came out there. Really, I mean, Jay can do what he wants to do in that ring.
The man had an ego,
but it's shit because, like, I just like when I put somebody on a show now, it's, you know, it's literally I put special guest Zach Amico or special guest Scott Chaplin, and it's just a different sort of like. I don't know. I don't treat them like they're my openers. You know,
I say work with.
Yeah. It's just shifted. But back then it was like, cause the reality is that's all those guys had though. Like I said, Norton was making money, but nobody else in that crew was really making money. You know what I'm saying? Bobby Kelly was doing okay, but he wasn't making like life changing money. I mean, Bobby probably was making barely six figures, and that was through like TV deals and like doing a little bit of touring and like, but he wasn't like a national headliner like that. He was still taking like the regular weekend rates. You know, when I started becoming friends with Bobby, that's when he started sort of shifting a little bit and making a little bit of cash. But it was definitely, you mentioned insecurity. It literally all comes from insecurity. That's all they got is to like sit at the cellar table and be like, I got into the fucking cellar. Being at this table means more than anything in the world.
In New York City, we are the big dogs.
Yep.
Decided.
It was always, I remember like, I was so wide-eyed and just drunk on the romanticism of stand-up comedy when I first started, like just thought it was the coolest like fucking thing. And I loved that. I was like, oh yeah. And that's the culture. Everyone's just like viciously bust each other's balls, but there's no ego involved. And I remember like very quickly, like being like, oh no, there's tons of ego involved. Like it would start like that. And then there'd be like a whole thing where like Joe DeRosa was pouting about what Bobby Kelly said. And they were like mad at each other because one of them like ball busted the wrong way or something like that. It was like, oh, this is all just a bunch of bravado covering up a bunch of faggotry.
Lewis, did you choose? Cause it's funny. I never did both. And Dave, I don't think you did either. As far as music and comedy, I'm surprised you didn't pursue music. Was the reason you didn't go music because you saw, was there a clear path in comedy that you pursued it?
There wasn't really a crossover.
No, I understand. But I'm saying if you were going to stay in entertainment or do entertainment stuff at all, why didn't you push music for it? Because
I wasn't good.
You just weren't good enough.
You're like, you're also not going to
somehow that didn't stop you from confidence. And somehow that same impulse never came up.
I'll take it from you, Dave. I'll say it about myself.
I'll tell you,
for the record, Lewis is very good at comedy.
The only time that comedy is more fun than music, as far as like, you know, the feeling you want to get inside, is the coming up phase. Because like the open mic level of it is because in comedy, it's set up and proposed for you to do a performance and not be good. You know what I'm saying? It's hard in music to like do that on a daily basis.
Scratches an itch in a different way. So comedy, like we were talking about it earlier, right? Like the wins were just simply getting on stage, writing a new joke and it killing, or just even getting a good laugh. You're like, oh fuck that. That the endorphins that came from that, it was like, wow, holy shit. Like that turnover, you got it every time. In music, you didn't get that same sort of turnover. So when I was in a band, first of all, it was really one band. I tried to start other bands afterwards. It just didn't, like, we never were very good together. We had one band that was okay. It was very okay music. This was like high school. I was a good promoter. I was always me though. So I was producing shows. I produced my own music festival. Yeah. I like literally rinse and repeat. Like this is sort of who I've always been. So that's why like Coheed and Cambria was opening for my band when I was in high school. Cause we had a draw. And when I say a draw, we can get like a couple hundred kids to come to a show because that's all, there was not a lot to do for 16-year-old, 15-year-old kids. So like we would do these shows where we'd get like cool punk rock bands. Listen, and cool. Like
now for a limited time only, if you buy one Salty Black Flower ticket, you get this ticket for free and this ticket for free.
But we just weren't that good of a band. My singer wasn't very good. My guitarist and my bassist were really good. And we were just okay. We were also writing weird music that wasn't like, it wasn't hitting on like a genre. Like when Coheed and Cambria started opening for us, it was like, holy shit, that band is good. They were really, really tight. And their music was really unique, but still had, it hit a thing where like the hardcore kids and the emo kids liked it. Like everyone.
Did he go with that voice from the get-go?
Oh yeah. It was even higher back then. Like their newer shit, he deepens his voice a little bit. I chatted with him literally a couple weeks ago. Cause he told me next time, if we ever want to go, we can get like, you know, watch side stage. Like we don't have to like,
Jay's been burned like this recently. Here we go, John.
Cambria. They told me they give me tickets.
We're friends.
Lick a dog. Tell him.
Somehow Mike Fenoy is sitting in the parking lot all by himself at the end of this story.
Everybody's side stage and Mike Fenoy is in his seat by himself.
The music thing was never really viable for me. Like for me, it's kind of crazy. Like Dave Green, who you guys have all met, he's such an incredible musician. He just doesn't have it's crazy to me. Like Dave Green, I believe is in terms of talent of my friends, maybe the most talented friend I have, including all of my famous comedian friends.
That's more, I know a few examples like this in comedy, but it's very rare. In music, there's examples all over the place of people like that. It's like in comedy, there's very few examples of someone who gave it a go, was insanely talented, and nothing happened for them. Like it's rare. I know a few people like that, but it's rare.
There's guys that are funny, but they weren't insanely good. There are guys funny enough that they could have made it and been famous, but they
kind of gave up.
They couldn't cook in the oven long enough. It got too hot, and it just wasn't enough upside that they move on or they don't.
Travis Poston was
an example, but also an example of, again, not, he was a funny guy. I mean, I didn't really see
he his wasn't a very good stand-up comic. I remember I put him on my shows.
He didn't really do it long.
Yeah. But there were other guys who I thought were very funny, but in music, there are guys who were like insanely gifted. And if you don't get on a track with something developing, you could just nothing comes of it.
Hey, what you talk about those tracks? Shane's assistant I talked to her. She was a former pro ice skater, figure skater, and it was funny. It's like that world's like you invest your whole life into it as a child to do these things, and you age out of it at 16 years old. Or something. And it's like, after that, it's the future is, it's like you could do the Olympics, which would be great. Maybe get endorsements, but the future of it is the ice capades
was the way to get a check.
Teaching ice skating. It's just like, it's such a definite ending. Same thing when people dedicate their whole life to gymnastics when they're younger, it's like, then what?
Yeah. There's no path to anything. It was like,
it's like a world-class medalist, silver medalist gymnast could be in a circus, like walking on a fucking wheel. in a box in a circus.
Sometimes you'll see like somebody goes on like America's Got Talent and they're like, it's just like a chick who's really strong, right? And she picks up her sister, and they're doing the stuff where it's like one hand, they're holding the other one up and like, they're like kind of tumbling on each other with their feet. And you're like, how is there going to be a show built around this? You can go to fucking Cirque du Soleil and be one of the performers and have a set on Cirque du Soleil. I understand.
But you see the amount of hours that you put into this, like it's stuff like that, that you'd be like, oh, you guys choreographed this and worked on this every goddamn day for so long.
America's Got Talent, such a great example of that. Cause I watched that and it really is the danger acts and the stuff that go up there. The people that do like blindfold, falling down, catching themselves with their ankle on a thing. It's like this craziest shit. And you're like, where the fuck do you practice this? But what do you do for money? Because it can't be this. And it's the most intricate skill in the world that you have to be so precise at. And that's not even how you make money.
Well, you'll see, I don't even understand that. Like, there'll be just a guy on Instagram or, some other platform. And he's like, I'm in Hawaii. I'm going to go down this, down this hill for the next 20 minutes on a skateboard, no helmet. And he's just like, and he's just going like so fucking fast. You're like, the margin error, if you fuck up, you're dead. One time, like, how do you even get good enough to even do it? Like, not once can you have a bad day. You can't have a Natalie Cuomo set where you're fucking like, look at me in my eye. No, that's never happening with that guy. Or he breaks every bone in his fucking body.
That's fucking. And then for what? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's such a weird, like when someone puts an Asian or Indian kid on a path to becoming a brain surgeon at 3 years old, makes more sense than pushing them into like becoming the best fencer in the world.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Also, because like, if you're like thing, like if you're one of those crazy, you know, like Vivek Ramaswamy tiger mom type things, where you know, like the way Indian and Asians raise their kids, where it's like you, like for fun on the weekends, you will be allowed to read fiction. You know what I mean? Like you're at violin lessons every day at 5 a.m. You're like, people are like that hard on their kid, which I could never imagine pushing my kids like that. But like, at least even if the goal is like you're going to be a brain surgeon, if you're going and getting straight A's and doing all this shit, maybe you don't become a brain surgeon. You pick some other major in college, but you still got into like a good college. You pick a good job. You do this. What you guys are talking about are these things where it's like you're putting so – you're doing that. You're being a tiger mom to your kids, but where there's such a slim payoff. And then if you don't achieve that, it's not like – like I know someone – like my wife was like friends with a chick who was like that, trying to make the Olympics as a skater. She's up at 4 a.m. every morning to go do it, and then just lost at like the qualifying games.
You know what you gotta do?
And then you're just like, and that's just it. It's awful. She just doesn't do it anymore.
If you don't make the Olympics, you got to become the Texas Tornado.
It's true.
Is that your next?
You always become the Texas Tornado.
I was a fan. That's the backup. It's a good backup plan.
Literally, trying to go into professional wrestling is a better thing to try to go into starting at 5 years old than figure skating.
Yeah.
There's a higher ceiling.
I mean, the Texas Tornado's finishing move was spinning in a circle and throwing a punch, and he made it to the top.
The fact that he had one leg is bonkers. Like, I never knew that until that movie.
Wait, he had one leg?
Are you kidding, Dave? You're being funny.
No. I'm being 100% sincere.
Did you not watch the movie?
What movie?
Oh, so good. What is it called, Jay?
I watched the documentary on Vince McMahon, but they didn't cover this. Wait, Kerry Von, what's his name?
He lost.
The Iron Claw.
Iron Claw. It's such a good movie, first of all. It's a great hotel movie if you're like on the road.
What do you mean he only had one leg? I watched him wrestle. He had two legs.
Dave, he had one leg. He had a fake prosthetic foot, and he would run out and do the Texas Tornado shit.
Hold this up immediately, Alex.
At the
what are we talking about here? Wait, the whole time?
No.
He had a motorcycle accident. No, by the time he got to the WWF, yes.
So this is when I knew him. I don't think I ever saw him before the WWF.
No, you never saw him in the Indies in Texas.
Yeah.
Oh, I did.
Wait, but show like a video of like one of his matches. Let me see like a video of him in the WWF.
They were the killers.
Let me look back at it with adult eyes now and see if I can spot. Because now, even that you're saying it to me, I do kind of remember him almost being on a lean a lot. Like he's kind of leaning on one leg.
Yeah, dude, he hit it. Literally, he hit it from everyone in the locker room. The wrestlers didn't know. Because they thought that they wouldn't push him in the WWF. So, literally his father, like, it's all, you know, the Von Erich curse. Like, everyone died and fucking. Yep. The movie Iron Claw is about the Von Erich curse. And it follows, like, all the – dude, it's such a fucking good movie.
Wait, before
I got to watch this.
Before you finish that sentence, it's a good movie. But here's how terrible the luck and thing of the Von Erich family is. They left out two deaths. They were like – because they said it's too sad of a movie if you know how many of these kids.
Was it two or one? I think it might have been one.
Maybe one got left out.
But that's really funny.
They didn't even mention another brother. They were like, look, it's getting a little redundant with all these brothers.
Everybody just dies.
There's the Texas Tornado was like, hey, look, I got one more leg than my brother does. You know what I mean?
Yeah, pull him up wrestling, Alex. Is this WWF?
No, doesn't look like
WCCW.
Alex, pull up.
He has legs. I understand it's not Alex's fault. She's a girl on his WWF network. She was watching because they bought
WWF went back and bought all the other promotions, and now they own it and license it. But we want to see when he was actually wrestling.
I'm such like an old school WWF fan. I could just see the mat like just for a second. Like that's not WWF.
Me too.
That ain't no WWF match.
I could tell from the video quality.
That was Jerry
this
Lawler.
This mat was aired on TBS at best.
It was WCCW.
Yeah. World Class Championship Wrestling.
Like, just pull him up in the Intercontinental title match because he was
against I can correct you, Mike, real quick. WCCW did not become WCW. Two different things. NWA became WCW.
You stupid fuck.
That is right. WCCW just was what it was till it went away.
Also, I don't want to say because I want to keep it as a surprise just in case it doesn't happen, but G Mike's booking of a professional wrestler that none of you guys have reacted to, I'm so excited.
It's a fun one.
I'm so excited.
I'm not sure I knew who it is.
Oh, really? That's crazy.
Hold on, let me just look back up. Where was the?
I mean, if you watched that organization, you know who it is.
Are we just have anybody just looked up the Texas Tornado versus looking up Kerry Von Erich?
Oh,
final matches. Just look up, yeah, Kerry. Just look up Texas Tornado Intercontinental Championship because he's had a bunch of defenses, and that's definitely in the WWF. I mean, just so you guys know, I'm going to drink beer on this episode.
The thing about it is I never really watched that league.
Really?
I was a WWF guy.
So was I. I became a teenager and got cool.
Yeah, I stopped watching when I became a teenager and got cool.
Texas Tornado, Mr. Perfect.
Yeah, perfect. There we go. Click on it.
Oh, this is it.
He's got one leg here, Dave.
No, I see two.
It's a glowing for the Intercontinental belt.
But how is he doing this?
It's crazy. It's a testament to how fucking athletic this guy actually was, because you see people on prosthetics in the 80s. Prosthetics were not like that.
Oh yeah. It wasn't like what they have today.
You have like the backwards dinosaur foot where he's like running faster than normal people.
Yeah, he had the top of a mop down there.
Yeah, no, dude, it's actually a fucking really crazy scene when they show him training in the movie.
This is so impressive that he was able to do this.
I just watched this movie again the other day.
Really?
Yeah, it's so good. I've watched it twice now. It's so good. Mr. Perfect didn't even know while working with him that he had a fucking... It's his right foot.
That seems pretty imperfect.
Oh, my God. He cheated, ref.
Dirty bastard.
DiBiase right in his bad foot.
You would think at some point... Like Jack Tunney would have sat down and been like, all right, guys, look, I've been reviewing the tape. We have the worst referees in the business.
That would have been a great bit. If
you guys are missing stuff constantly. Goes,
these guys are so easily distracted. It's crazy. Like,
what a great bit if they would have started doing like replays, disqualifying people.
What was that in?
What? What was what in?
What Lewis just said.
No, I said it would have been funny if they did that.
Oh.
Every match just ends with the disqualification. Like, we reviewed the
tape. Upon reviewing the tape, wow.
They did not have reviewing the tape technology in the WWF.
Guys, he goes, very simple concept. I made a terrible mistake. he had his leg on the rope. His leg was on the rope. But listen, it's there on tape, so I'm sorry. I have to strip you of your belt and give it to the new champ.
Well, they did have review the tape technology because if you remember when Shawn Michaels won the WWF Royal Rumble, they went and reviewed the tapes. It was a whole thing, right?
So for the first time ever.
He flipped over and only 1 foot. And by the way, I think that was bullshit. I don't think they ever came up with a 1 foot, 2 foot rule. I think just because it was obvious that his foot hit it, they were like, well, it's got to be both feet have to hit the floor. Yeah.
Well, we all know the biggest scandal when they had the fake that The Rock said, I quit. Or that
Mankind said, I quit. Yeah.
Wait, why? I don't remember.
They just used audio from him from something else, but nobody could tell, even though it was the exact way he said it that other time they played it a bunch. You don't remember the I quit match? Isn't that the one that Mick Foley's
the greatest? It's the greatest match ever.
It's the, I don't know, dude. I say Mick Foley, Undertaker.
Yeah, you're right. Probably that one. Mick Foley really had the best matches ever, but that was, maybe besides the Undertaker, Hell in a Cell, that was the best.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a human pincushion.
The Rock versus Mankind.
It's the one from the documentary where Mankind's, his kids are there, and the wife starts. By the way, this is bad wifing and bad mothering, I'll argue here. And I know she didn't mean to be that way. If you're bringing your kids to your husband, the extreme master of wrestling's wrestling match, and he's getting fucked up bad because he's supposed to be, and the kids are getting upset, you're supposed to go, it's a play, guys. It's all fake. You know, it's fake.
Yeah, no, she gets hysterical and gets the kids terrified.
She's like falling to pieces with the kids, and they're all just sitting there crying. It's like, get the fuck out of here.
And it's not acting. No kids can act like this. These kids are terrified. They are being traumatized in real time.
Oh yeah, for sure. They're sad. Gee, Mike, Daddy's dead. Oh God, Daddy's dead.
It was genuinely a horrible thing, an abusive thing to do to kids.
Gee, Mike, I have to go blow my nose. Gee, Mike, bring up.
Why don't we do plugs while you blow your nose, and then because I could use a quick pee. I drank a lot of coffee. I'll go first. Is that okay, Dave?
Of course.
Come see me live on the Road to Bring Five Friends tour. If you're watching this live tomorrow night, sold out. Sorry, boys. Too many people brought five friends. But I'll be at the end of the month. I'll be in San Diego at the American Comedy Company the last weekend of April. I'm very excited about these shows. Come the fuck out. Let's party. My May is pretty busy, guys. So come see me in May. I will be in Houston at the Punchline. I'm going to be in Fort Collins, Colorado at the Comedy Fort. Fort Myers, Florida at Snappers Comedy Club. I'm sure it'll be great. Then at the end of May, I'm going to Europe with Scott Chaplin. Amsterdam, Glasgow, Dublin, Manchester, and London. Boston in June. Lots of stuff coming up. Go to my website, lewisofskanks.com. While you're there, take a moment and subscribe to my email list, which gets you a bonus podcast and access to my newsletter, which literally I'm giving away Skankfest names this week before the trailer comes out. I'm giving inside information on all the things. They're telling me I can't. Rebecca and Christine are like, no, you mustn't. I was like, I'm doing it for my fucking subscribers. So that's that. Make sure if you love this show, you're already subscribed. Thank you guys for subscribing. Check out the rags.
Didn't use the word mustn't.
You mustn't. Christine said it.
What?
Christine said mustn't.
You mustn't rape me, Lewis. Mustn't I?
Hold on.
I believe her exact words were shan't.
Go ahead, shan't.
I have been traveling like a maniac. I'm off for a... I've been a busy little boy with two Joe Rogan appearances, by the way. Go check those out if you haven't already. The debate with Douglas Murray is getting a huge reaction. Next stop is in a week. I'll be out at Zany's in Chicago, which is like one of my favorite goddamn clubs in the country. And then Zany's in Rosemont, which is also a great, great club. And then another one of my favorite clubs coming up after that is American Comedy Company in San Diego. Then I'll be, for the first time, I'll be at Skyline Comedy Club in Appleton, Wisconsin. Then Wise Guys in Salt Lake City, another great club. And then for the first time, which I hear from everybody, you included, Jay, is like the best market, I'll be at Comedy Works in Denver, July 10th through 12th. Really looking forward to that.
Crowd Work specials.
Right. Where They Them was filmed. And then I'll be back. Another one. I love these places. Another one. Hilarities in Cleveland, Providence, Rhode Island, Tacoma, Spokane, Detroit, Tampa. ComicDaveSmith.com for all those ticket links. Yeah. Fun time. A lot of traveling. I had a fun time with you guys out in Nashville, man. That was a fun comedy festival.
It was. Good festival. BigJComedy.com for all my dates. The Peter North American tour coming on a city near you. Look for a city near you. I'm going to all of them. I'm coming on all of them. If you're listening to this right away, I'm still in Helium Comedy Club Atlanta. And, you know, come get tickets. Last night I had a good... two people who worked at the club last night, a manager and the club thing, both said in different ways that the crowd is light. They're like, the way I asked the guy, I go, how the numbers look for the weekend overall? And she made this face. She went, ugh. Like, okay, well, don't do that. And then they go, oh, I mean, Saturday looks good. But it's nice. It's on the outskirts of Atlanta. Atlanta needs a club, so let's fill this fucking thing up, man. It's a really beautiful place. And then I start hitting all over the fucking road. That's right. I'm doing Moon Tower Festival next weekend. A bunch of shows there at the Vulcan Gas Company because I asked to do the Creek in the Cave, but Moon Tower Comedy Festival's fucking retarded. Then Tulsa, Oklahoma, San Diego, so many things coming up. Denver Comedy Works also. So look for a city near you. Second half of my double crowd work special, They, coming out 420. Support big time. Let's make it happen. Let's get that thing up. Let's get it over a mil. Let's get both of them over a mil. That would be huge. That would make me happy. So yeah, support that. Watch the Bonfire. Listen to the Bonfire. Me and the great Robert Kelly. And of course, Story Wars, America's favorite new game show obsession, right here on Gas Didge.
Big episode with Dave Smith coming out soon.
I'm pretty sure that I am out of the running for Beast Games, guys.
No. You were so close to 15 mil.
I'm bummed.
Dude. What
happened? They get to know you better?
I think they started looking up my, because they have you sign off on a thing for social media. And I'm sure that's what happened, because my ex-girlfriend is doing it. And I'm pretty sure she's doing Beast Games.
Really?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about travel accommodations and shit with her. I'm like, oh, they stopped answering my emails.
guys, you know, I told the Josh story on this and here, and I just got a text right now from the person who recently fucked up, who asked me for tickets and then fucked up. We all know the story I'm talking about. Dave, it's your favorite.
Mm-hmm. We told the whole story.
And then I told the Josh story. The guy from the story we told about the stand just sent me a text to let me know. He goes, Josh Adam Myers is gaslighting you. You need to he's like giving me advice on like Josh.
Oh wait, the guy from the band?
No. I'm poorly describing this.
The guy from the stand. Lewis, the whole story about Jay getting him.
I got him tickets, and then he fucking. You know what I'm talking about now?
Yeah, another story, yeah.
Okay, him, he just texted me to tell me about, like, how Josh is being, like, shitty. Like, it's like, you need to see a therapist, pal, because Josh is, just like giving advice on somebody else on how you should handle a friendship.
I get it.
I'm okay.
I thought it was somebody that knew inside information about Josh, and he was spilling the beans. Like, no, Josh has been purposefully gaslighting you behind your back.
No. He's saying like the way he handled that night or whatever. He's critiquing Josh from that night, and it's just like, you're critiquing Josh from that night.
I'm just saying, sir, if you listen to the show. Reply to what we talked about you. That, you lunatic.
Oh man, did we play on here the figs thing? We did, right?
Yeah,
we did.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that made me laugh so hard.
It was pretty great.
This crazy guy. Bunch of our interns or intern contestants are here.
I think we're gonna wait to meet them though.
Sure. I was just saying they're here.
Oh, they're here. Hello, guys.
And gal.
Hello, guys. Yeah, one of them said he worked for the first season of Beast Games.
Oh, really?
I just wanted
to get the inside scoop.
For Baby James, he would have been so excited had I been on Beast Games.
Well, he still can be excited that his ex-mommy's on.
Well, now she doesn't need me if she wins Beast Games.
Now, if she wins Beast Games, Lewis has to go hat in hand. Babe, I've been thinking. So, that was crazy. That was crazy what happened back there. Why was I fucking all those other girls? I can't even remember now. They just seem like 15 million distant memories.
I wasn't fucking other girls. Please don't say that.
I'm just kidding. You weren't. If she wins.
If. And only if.
We should do skank games. We should do our own version of Beast Games and make that one of the rounds for the Intern Olympics.
Are you willing to give up your portion of $40?
It's Beast Games with no cash prize.
You will actually be hit by a train. Will you let your friend be hit by a train, or will you take $4,000?
No, but really.
Do you have health insurance? Seriously, this is a very important question. Do you have health insurance?
Can you put me on it? Me trying to get money from them. Oh, fuck. Yeah, I can't believe you never watched ECW, Dave.
I not never, like, I had seen that, but it was kind of just like I caught one when it was on and I was like, whoa, they got like this whole crazy, they're doing shit I couldn't have imagined.
The distribution on ECW was very strange. It was on like the Madison Square Garden network.
Okay, yeah, that's right. You'd find it like at midnight on MSG or something, and then so I never like consistently watched it or like knew who the guys were.
It was so local Philly, so I knew it all.
But weirdly, yeah. I mean, those guys, the WWF for the Attitude Era, really just, I mean, I guess they bought it, so I'm not saying like they stole it, but they really just took the ECW thing and then like
that was they bought it down way after the Attitude Era. They just noticed so what was going on with ECW.
They just saw it and they were like, they did a watered down version of that kind of essentially.
Well, they evolved it first, then they brought it back shitty.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
But it's like all those guys, like, I mean, you wonder about like how much money does Paul Heyman make? He's like the director of like.
Well, they were calling themselves broke at a point.
No, I know ECW was like hemorrhaging money at one point, I'm sure. But like, what a unique product! Like, what a cool, like, well, that's
they,
like.
Well, they was also smart. They made it awesome. They made it awesome, and then started getting like it was kind of neat to see like when a guy was done with like the bubbly like WWE, like his, you know, his money career was over, they can come back and have another run where it's like, oh, look at so-and-so coming to slum it. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but I wonder how much they pay those guys. I mean, like,
I think a lot. I think a lot.
I watched, part of my algorithm on Facebook is like just WWF lore, like 90s WWF lore. So it's like somebody posted Luna Vachon's WWF contract and it was for $500 a week.
Yeah.
And like when she was like, I think fighting for the championship, but it's like, it was also like before female wrestlers got really popular. It was almost like an annoying thing in WWF. You're like, I don't give a shit about fucking female wrestlers. The championship means nothing.
It's robbery on such a different level in comedy, because in comedy you're getting robbed, but it's like basically on live shows. The problem with like a Luna Vachon is like they end up owning her likeness and everything. And you were like, if you just gave her, if you said, we're not giving you money for wrestling at all, but you'll get the revenue, your percentage revenue from the dolls, from the Luna Vachon dolls, like, you know, yeah, the wrestling figures, she would be a millionaire.
Well, if you remember the deal, because I just remember this from like the documentaries about the Montreal Screwjob thing, which, as I've said, I unapologetically on Vince McMahon's side there. But the deal that Bret Hart got for WCW, that everyone was like, yo, this is like no one's ever gotten a deal like this before. There was like, I think it was like $3 million over 3 years. So it's like he made like $1 million a year after all that time of being like the guy.
And that was a good deal.
And that was, everybody was like, I can't believe he fucking got paid that much.
Didn't they reluctantly make him in the NWO at one point?
I don't remember. I never really watched that.
So Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart are like, I guess they're feuding like now.
I think they've always hated each other. Yeah.
It's just that they hate each other. I know that's in my YouTube algorithm is tons of like that. Like they call it, and they always say, it goes, Bret Hart shoots on Hulk Hogan. It's always like shoots on them, they say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wish they would feud like they do in the WWF, though. I wish Hulk Hogan would be like, Bret Hart, he's just not. he's a fucking asshole. Fuck that.
Let me tell you something, brother. This guy crashed my car. He my house once. Tried to fuck my wife.
It's like they both like think their contributions to like the history of the WWF are like more important. So like that's a big part of like, I guess Bret Hart was like, or Hulk Hogan was like, you know, everyone, you know, every young wrestler aspires to be me. And Bret's like, no, they aspire to be me. You're like, shut up, Bret.
Dude, do you guys?
I don't know why I just don't like Bret Hart to this day. Like, I think.
Honestly, I never, it's.
Never
it's,
gave a shit.
All these dumb reasons. Never cared for his body, his hair.
His greasy ass hair.
Yeah.
It looked like it'd be annoying to wrestle with him. Like, dude, get your grease off me.
Yeah, he never looked cool.
But then again, I never also really liked Hulk Hogan. So Hulk Hogan was too cartoonish. By the time I was into wrestling, Hulk Hogan was like, and don't get me wrong, I was rooting for Hulk Hogan against Macho Man, WrestleMania 5, the first WrestleMania I ever saw. But by the time WrestleMania 6 came about and The Ultimate Warrior was fighting Hulk Hogan, I was an Ultimate Maniac. Like, I was like Ultimate Warrior all day long. He was just so much cooler. And I don't care now that true wrestling fans are like, dude, the Ultimate Warrior didn't know how to work. It's like, shut up. He was awesome. He shook the ropes. It was great.
There's nothing, dude, that is literally, and I'm not trying to pick on him, but that is the version of Mike Figgs being like, oh, whoever sells tickets, like blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. That's the game. Little kids liked the Ultimate Warrior. Levfer is what I meant to say. But it was him saying the thing about Natalie Cuomo, like being like, oh, you sell tickets. You know, it's the same thing. It's being like, you're not a real technician. You're just out there doing this bullshit. It's like, it doesn't matter. If people like it, then that's the business.
As a little kid, 7-year old, so fucking cool.
We loved the Ultimate Warrior. He was the
It was the fringes, the straps. It was just like the makeup. It was
made for a 7-year old boy to be like, awesome. Yes. That's what I'm talking about.
He was the Ferrari of human beings. Ruled, dude. Fucking no, it was just like so badass. Like, I didn't give a shit about it. It's like people are like, yeah, you understand, like the Four Horsemen, Arn Anderson. It's like, shut up. Ric Flair did nothing for me. When Ric Flair came back to the WWF, I was like, old man, get out of the ring. I
never gave a fuck about his back. Remember they try to sell you on those guys? They go, uh-oh. Ole and Arn Anderson. Is that Tully Blanchard making an appearance? Like, these guys are my fucking old enough to be my dad's fucking friends, dude.
They literally look just like dads in the neighborhood, and I'm supposed to care that they had a long history in the old school fucking
in a league regions. I never watched. Yeah, dude, like it. Yeah.
Any wrestler who did this before they fought, I knew I was going to hate when they'd go. Yeah, anyone who did a lot of clapping, shoulder slaps,
they like, just stopped. Dude, we were kids, and it was like,
yeah, pull up the shorts, give a little, get it over his gut.
Yeah, dude, there's certain guys like, and don't get me wrong, like now in ECW, fucking, what's his name? Oh, fuck, why am I blanking on him? Terry Funk. Terry Funk was just badass because it was sick that this like drunk old man was taking like baseball bats with fucking barbed wire wrapped around it to the fucking skull.
He also wore a t-shirt and his dumb outfit. Like, he wasn't out there like those guys coming out with like their hairy father bodies and like and wearing like the small trunks. It was such a fucking funny look. And you just had to, like, I mean, the Four Horsemen at one point, the concept was so good. It was Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson, Ric Flair, and Tully Blanchard.
Tully.
And I mean, like, they were just, it was four dudes. So Ric Flair was breakout because he was the best, like, salesman. You know, he was the talker.
Yeah. But, like, young Ric Flair was kind of cool in a weird way. Like, I understand now looking back at, like, a young
Ric Flair. Yeah, if you look at those promos, if I was watching him in sunglasses being like, I drive a Rolls Royce and I got all these.
He was great. I never cared about him winning or losing.
For my time, it was just an old man in a robe who came in and was like styling and profiling. And you were like, what? This sucks. Who cares? Yeah. Bring back the Ultimate Warrior.
Did you guys ever see when The Rock hosted SNL some years back and he does the cutting the promo with the guy? And like it's one of the funniest things they've ever
done. I don't think so.
Oh, bring this up, Mike. Lewis, you're gonna love this.
Please,
this is a well-written sketch. It's like two guys cutting a promo and one of them going too far, which is like basic, but what he does is so great. Rock was good on this.
Rock is incredible.
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah, he's great.
You watch this. We can't hear it at all.
Yeah, volume. Whoa, whoa,
whoa.
Caught in a bad romance. Yeah, 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 yeah. Sorry, I'm doing a medley of today's music.
Yo, yo, yo. Lady Gaga's doing the garden. I'm going to go. I want to see Gaga. You saw her at a good time, Lewis.
Yeah, I did.
You saw prime Gaga.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, feel free to just really let me have it in this promo, man. Don't hold back.
Okay, you sure?
Yeah, 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 definitely. Just go for it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Okay, everybody, great. Everybody set?
This could be fun.
Yeah, man.
And action.
I'm here with our main event competitors, Coco Watchout and Trash Yard Mod. And there is no love lost between these two. Isn't that right, Mod?
No. Oh, you better watch out, because when the mutt gets out of the trash yard, the first thing he's gonna do is take out this big old pile of stinking, rotten garbage.
And what do you have to say to that, Coco?
Let me tell you something about this guy. He has herpes. It's true. Oh, he's got herpes and he's got it bad.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're going to be wearing a body bag when I'm through with you.
Yeah, well, you can't have sex with anyone without having a talk first. Herpes. I heard your doctor said it was the most herpes he'd ever seen.
Well, you heard it here first. Junkyard Mutt has herpes, and it gets settled this Sunday at WrestleMania.
And cut.
Oh, no, no. Play it. Woo.
I mean, hey, dude. Hey. So what'd you think, man? That's pretty good, right?
No, not really. Yeah, no, that stuff was kind of personal. Yeah, maybe just talk to me more about stuff you're going to do to me in the ring.
Okay, yeah. Cool, I got it. Yeah, okay, cool, not man. A problem.
That's cool.
All right. Promo tape two.
Okay.
And action.
Well, I'm here with Coco Montana and Trish Armand, and there is no love lost between these two. Isn't that right, Coco?
Oh, yeah. When we get in that ring on Sunday, I'm going to tell everybody about what I found on his computer. It's full of Family Guy porn. You keep Googling Lois Sets Brian, and Brian's the dog, man.
I like dogs. How do you know all of that?
To dig up dirt on you, and then they found a ton. You remember the college girlfriend named Donna? It turns out 8 months after you broke up, she had a baby girl, Evelyn.
What?
I met her. She's a lovely girl, an honor student, and she doesn't want to have a thing to do with you, man, because you'll never meet her, because you're not fit to be a dad, and that's what the Coco is cooking.
That's great.
And tell me, what do you have to say to that mutt? You heard it here, folks, and it all gets settled this
one
Sunday.
More.
Cut. I like that. Were you guys feeling that one?
No.
Yeah, cut.
You said, man, just let you have
it. Yeah, I know,
it, right?
But I take it back, man. Okay, just do normal stuff, like how you're gonna, like, rip me apart or something.
Okay, I mean, that seems wrong to me,
no,
but okay.
Wrong.
No, okay, for sure.
Right.
Okay, I got
take
it.
Three.
Got it, come on.
All right, all right.
And action.
I'm here with Coco Montana and Trish Armand.
I'm gonna rip this guy apart. And I mean psychologically. Yeah, I've been working on something the last 8 months, Mutt. You know the internet girlfriend, Stacy?
Yeah.
The college student who lives in Hawaii that you've never met in person?
Oh, no.
Well, I got news for you. She's really not a college student, and her real name's really not Stacy. It's Coco! That's right. I catfished your ass. I made you fall in love with me, and you had no idea.
That is so intricate! Why are you doing this?
And that's not all. You know that cute picture of Stacy that you've been spanking it to? It's actually a picture of Evelyn, the daughter you never met.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Well, there you have it, folks.
He goes. He goes, I'm going to destroy you in that ring. And I mean psychologically.
That's great. The Rock was great. Very talented.
Yeah. That was like, you know, they kind of started to nail it around that era. I tried to watch Raw recently. I just didn't give a shit. There was like three. It was the premiere on Netflix.
I did the premiere too. And I couldn't get
three matches. A bunch of like they didn't have this much. Like soap opera when I was a kid, you would get a couple cutaways. It would be like, you know, you'd have like, you know, Brother Love's fucking thing, or you'd have like, you know, they have like a minute or two promo, but it was mostly wrestling. As I remembered it as a kid, it was mostly matches. You'd get like 5, 6, 7 matches in a night if you're watching Raw or one of these things. And it was
crowbarring in they're crowbarring in anyone who's promoting something on Netflix now.
It's like Tony was at the table.
It's a direct crossover. Well, at least Tony just did some like announcing stuff.
Yeah, well, Bert chokeslammed. Did you see that?
No, I saw what. No. I saw
pull up Bert on Raw.
I saw Schultz get thrown around by Logan Paul.
That one made a little bit of sense to me, at least because those guys had like podcasted together before.
It's dumb because, like, again, if you're trying not to like, if you're trying to keep up kayfabe, the fact that it's like, hey, you know, it's why is it that everybody that has a premiere on Netflix has some sort of a beef with one of our wrestlers?
Well, I mean, Bert Kreischer choke slamming. I mean, look, it looks so fun, and I'm happy for these guys. But if I'm a WWF fan, I'm infuriated.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. That's how I feel.
I mean, they are just dumb wrestling fans, so they probably did like it.
I mean, dude, butt cracked out.
Look at Bert's crack and belly. God bless him. I mean, if I just, I'm in substantially better shape than Bert, and I wouldn't get on TV right now with my shirt off.
Well, I mean, he's never done taking his shirt off because he's in shape. It's more of like the not give a fuck thing.
Yeah, it's in a weird way. It's just because you're like in the middle ground, like because you're almost in really good shape, and you're like were in really good shape and then went on vacation. Somehow that's more embarrassing than Bert Kreischer just being like, "Yeah, I got a big beer belly." Like it's like you look at you and you'd be like, "Hey, you're trying."
Yeah, well, I guess that'd be wrong.
Yeah. No, I say like Bert's thing is like the shirt's off. It's like because look at my big belly and shit.
Yeah.
Oh, oh, boys!
What a life! What a life! We wouldn't want to do that anyway. Netflix.
Yeah, it's stupid. I hate, I hate wrestling and being involved in fun stuff.
cut to me and Jay getting stored with a Netflix. We're dressed up as mermaids flapping our tails. Little shell.
Oh, hey, boys. Who wants to fight over this siren?
It's still us being mermaids.
No matter what, we on TV we have to be mermaids. Always a fun hang with the boys in the Friday night hang. Thank you all for being subscribers to Gas Digital. Interns. We'll see you soon. Potential interns.
Yeah, I think they have a thing on Monday, an assignment, right, guys? Alex and G Mike. Yes.
Yes. All right. So until then, everybody, and we're back. We're back home on
Tim
Monday.
Tim Dillon and likely Dave Attell on Monday.
Ooh. Very
nice. We'll chat with you guys then. Until then, peace.
Been listening to the Legion of Skanks podcast with Big J Okerson.
Did you suck it? I think I would instinctually suck it.
Thick with three C's.
Who else be fucking over, Lewis?
Lewis Gomez.
Lewis J. Gomez, you motherfucker.
Lewis J. Gomez.
If you're trying to watch a retard draw swastika, it's hilarious.
I'm sort of known as a point guard of podcasting. Being a fat gay guy is so fucking awesome.
And comedian Dave Smith.
You fucking godless, soulless sodomites.
That's the fucking best joke I've ever heard in my life.
It was 8 inches.
The Legion of Skanks podcast.